6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Laos, where he will lay the groundwork for a February summit with leaders of 10 ASEAN countries that will be hosted by President Obama. Carl Thayer, defense analyst at the University of New South Wales, says Laos will have to balance its international diplomacy as they take over chairmanship of ASEAN and host major world leaders, including Mr. Obama.
Obama is going to visit the region in May, particularly to Vietnam. He's setting up in the last bit of the year where American diplomacy can go with Laos as chair and to try to keep it on an independent and neutral course, rather than leaning towards China, which some people argue would be the case.
During his stay, Secretary Kerry and Asian leaders will discuss pressing regional issues, including the South China Sea dispute and growing concerns about North Korea's nuclear program. Thousands of teacher trainees took to the streets of the Moroccan capital Rabat Sunday, protesting government plans to cut education jobs. Protests are one of the several rallies in the last few months against government plans to cut spending and reduce public sector hiring aimed at improving state finances. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has expressed strong support for Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank, comes amid increasing pressure from hardline coalition members over an incident in the Hebron settlement. Israeli troops on Friday removed several dozen settlers from two buildings, which the settlers had entered the previous day, saying they had bought them from Palestinians. Israeli Defense Minister, who authorized the removal, said the settlers were there illegally. This is VOA News. Syrian forces recaptured the town of Rabia Sunday, continuing their string of victories over rebels in the northwestern Latakia province. VOA asked Ohio State University Middle East scholar Alam Payen about the significance of all of this.
Anything that which can take some of these cities which are on the supply routes, it's extremely important militarily and also psychologically for the ISIL forces, and also it somehow boosts the morale of the Syrian army and the Kurdish Peshmerga. And also there are some, because Turks are also very much interested in the defeat of the Daesh or the ISIL, as the Arabs call it, Daesh. So this is an important development.
Latest violence in Syria comes as the UN works to bring opposition groups and the Syrian government to Geneva for a new round of peace negotiations. Disagreement over who will take part are expected to delay today's talks. Today marks the fifth anniversary of Egyptians launching protests against longtime leader Hosni Mubarak in a revolt that helped spark a wave of uprisings across the Middle East. Current President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi praised the 2011 revolution, saying it brought a new Egypt. He accused others of using it for personal gains in reference to the banned Muslim Brotherhood that won elections to take over the government following Mubarak's ouster. Sisi said 2013 efforts to push President Mohamed Morsi, Brotherhood member, from power. Brazilian officials have announced measures to prevent the spread of the Zika virus during the Rio de Janeiro Olympic Games later this year. Brazil is suffering from an outbreak of the virus, which health officials say may be behind a spike in cases of infants born with unusually small heads, as well as a paralysis-causing syndrome. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control is warning pregnant women to avoid travel to 14 countries and territories in the Caribbean and Latin America affected by the virus. Dr. Beth Bell is with the CDC.
Our growing concern now over the last short period of time is that a pregnant woman with Zika virus infection, that infection can be passed to the fetus.
The Centers for Disease Control here in the United States says there are no vaccines to prevent the spread of the Zika virus, and for now, no drugs to treat those who are affected. You can get more news by going to our website. You can find us at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, January 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Sudan rebel leader meets President Museveni today, Monday, on hindrance to peace implementation.
Our position on the 28th state is that this is a violation of the agreement. And since it is a violation and it is inconsistent with the agreement, we have nothing to do with it.
Riek Machar is former South Sudan vice president and currently rebel leader. The South Sudan government says President Kiir's 28th state's creation improves the August peace agreement. The return of Ivory Coast refugees sparks land title disputes, and Africa demands veto power in the UN Security Council.
On the eve of the meeting of the African Union, he saw it fit to meet to discuss what our position is regarding the issue of the reform of the UN Security Council and our position as Africa.
That's correspondent Sebastian Mofu interpreting President Robert Mugabe's comment after his meeting in Harare with Equatorial's president. A mobile platform helps poor Kenyans get health care, and El Nino puts the health of 60 million people at risk. Those stories plus Marco Woman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former South Sudan Vice President and rebel leader Riek Machar says he will ask Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni to tell President Salva Kiir to scrap his decision to create 28 states because it is hindering the implementation of the peace agreement. The Ugandan leader is an influential member of the East African regional bloc known as IGA, which played a key role in mediating last August peace agreement. Machar is scheduled to meet with President Museveni today, Monday. The meeting comes as both sides have missed Saturday's deadline to form a national unity government. Machar says the rebels first want to amend the current transitional constitution to incorporate last August peace agreement, which recognizes 10 states, but he said the South Sudan government wants President Kiir's 28 states be enshrined in the new constitution.
Our position on the 28 states is that this is a violation of the agreement. And since it is a violation and it is inconsistent with the agreement, we have nothing to do with it. The main problem is that the government is refusing to agree with us in the incorporation of the agreement to the transitional constitution so that the number of states is mentioned as 10, like it is now in the transitional agreement. So we think the 28 states declaration is an obstacle to the process of getting a constitution so that we can form a transitional government of national unity.
How is this issue going to be resolved?
Well, as I told you, you cannot form a transitional government of national unity without a constitution. You know that even if you want to establish a company, you must have rules for establishing such a company. So the same is establishing a government. You need to have a constitution. In this case, we need to amend the current transitional constitution so that it incorporates the agreement. The disagreement is that the government insists that the 28 states, which they established 39 days after the agreement was signed, they insist that these 38 states be enshrined in the constitution. But the agreement says 10 states only.
So you are scheduled to meet with Ugandan President Museveni. The meeting is on Monday. What are you going to tell him?
You know, President Museveni has been instrumental in persuading President Kiir to sign the agreement, which President Kiir did on the 26th of August, 9 days late. I think it is time for President Yoweri Museveni to exercise his influence on President Kiir so that President Kiir drops the 28 states and we go forward so that we can forge a constitution. And then once passed by the Transitional National Assembly, then a government can be established. What I'm going to do is appeal to President Museveni to assist us so that voice of reason is brought back.
So your group will stick by the peace agreement, but only with 10 states and not 28 states.
That is true. We'll stick by the agreement, because if we change, if we violate the agreement, we will be counted guilty like the government.
Dr. Machar, thank you very much again. Safe trip.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Riek Machar is former South Sudan vice president and currently rebel leader. He was speaking with me from Addis Ababa Airport en route to Kampala, Uganda. South Sudan's information minister says President Salva Kiir's creation of 28 states does not hinder the implementation of last August peace agreement. Michael McQueen says the 28 states creation is an improvement of the peace deal because it gives the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, SPLM in opposition, six governors instead of three and 40% in 10 states instead of 40% in three states. In addition, Michael McQueen says the 28 states idea is popular with South Sudanese, and if the rebels want, the government is willing to provide funding to put the idea to a national referendum. Mr. McQueen joins us now from Juba. Good morning, Mr. Minister.
Good morning, and good morning to all the listeners of VOA.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. We are happy to always have you on Daybreak Africa. The rebels led by Dr. Machar have said your government is hindering the peace process by your creation of 28 states. They are willing to stick by the August agreement, but not with 28 states.
Well, this is very unfortunate statement given by the expected first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan. The issue of the 28 states, our position as a government is that the current delegation that came to South Sudan is inclusive of 21 delegations for the 21 states established by the SPLM-AIO, and we have the list. Now they come up and say you are in violation of the agreement, and meanwhile they are sending 21 delegations to the 21 states which they had established. So our position is this. Our position has been that we, as the government of South Sudan, we are not here to renegotiate, but let us sit down and resolve this situation. By the way, this was a popular demand by the people of South Sudan. And this is the most appreciated decision ever taken by the president in response to the demand of the people of South Sudan. So there is no way the president would come today and say, I'm revoking it, because this was a popular demand.
Mr. Minister, the rebels have said that when they came up with the idea of 21 states, it was before the August agreement was signed. You came up with 28 states after the August agreement was signed. So they are saying you are in violation of the August agreement.
No, I don't agree with what they are saying, because when they decided to send us the list of their advance team, within the advance team there was a list of 21 delegates going to their 21 states. And we have the list. So that is a misleading information.
So where do we go? Is there a compromise to accept something between 21 and 28 where the two sides can agree?
In fact, there is no problem. It is only the SPLM-AIO which is trying to make a case out of nothing. Because if you go to the agreement, you will find that what we have done is even an improvement to the agreement. It is not a violation. And it is an improvement to their interests, even.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you. It's so nice to always have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you for joining us again.
Okay, thank you very much, and good morning to everybody.
Michael McQueen is South Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. Today's Monday, January 25th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe and Equatorial Guinea's President Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo said Africa wants to see reforms enacted at the UN Security Council, and they want the continent to be given at least one spot as a permanent member. The call came at the end of a visit to Zimbabwe by Nguema and ahead of an African Union General Assembly later this month. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
Mugabe, who is handing over the rotating AU chairmanship, said his Equatorial Guinea counterpart, Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mbasogo, was in Zimbabwe because of the upcoming African summit in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
So on the eve of the meeting of the African Union.
On the eve of the meeting of the African Union, he saw it fit to meet to discuss what our position is regarding various matters. The issue of the reform of the UN Security Council and our position as Africa. Then the issue of peace and security in Africa and terrorism. Nguema said there was a need for African leaders to translate political independence to economic independence. He said Africa's leaders must work today to ensure that this becomes a reality. On the issue of the UN Security Council, Nguema said reforms should be taken seriously. Concerning the reforms of the United Nations Security Council, which Africa is gunning for, we are asking for 2 seats of the Security Council of the United Nations. But if we are not given 2, at least be given 1 with full recognition of members with the right to veto. I think that is the revolution which Africa looks for. Russia, Britain, China, France and the United States are the permanent members of the UN Security Council. Now Africa, as a continent, wants to be represented in that powerful UN group. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The 2010-2011 political crisis in Ivory Coast forced hundreds of thousands of people to flee to neighboring countries. Most of them left everything behind, but when they returned, some found their land occupied by strangers, leading to clashes and intercommunal tensions. With more refugees still on their way back, the conflict threatens to impede the reconciliation the country has been trying to bring about. Emily Job reports.
In this region of Ivory Coast bordering Liberia, lush forest spreads as far as the eye can see. It is one of the most fertile regions in the country, but also one of the most heavily impacted by the political crisis after the 2010 presidential election. Post-election violence led about 300,000 people to flee the country, leaving everything behind. Many of them came from here and fled to Liberia. One refugee was Leontine Mea, who made a living by cultivating her ancestral land. She came back after 2 years in a refugee camp.
When I came back, I went to see my land, and I saw that distant relatives had sold my land and that other people were occupying it.
Land dispute is not new in Ivory Coast. In some areas, it dates back to the 1980s, but it has blown up in the past few years with the return of the 2010-2011 refugees. In some cases, community members or relatives claimed a right to the land while the refugee was gone and sold it illegally, often to foreigners, leading to serious tension when the landowner came home. The United Nations Refugee Agency, which is helping the returnees readjust, also advises them on the legal procedure to recover the land.
It's happening a lot. It's one of the main issues that we have we are facing. So we have put in place a mechanism whereby we can follow some, we call it protection monitoring. You cannot have social cohesion when people don't get the rights to be reinstated.
Joël Gueye also saw his land taken away, but he managed to find a solution thanks to the mediation of the local chief.
We went to see the chief of the village and he proposed that we do share work. We thought about it and eventually agreed.
Settlements are not always so easy to achieve because most people don't have a land certificate and land boundaries are often blurry. Local authorities, such as the prefectures, are also involved in solving cases.
The state has issued a decree regarding the boundaries of village territories. The state is due to finance it. And I believe that if this operation goes through, it will really decrease the number of conflicts, not only here, but in the whole of Ivory Coast as well.
The stakes in Ivory Coast are high as repatriation of the remaining refugees from Liberia resumed in December, and several thousands are expected to come home in the next few months. Emilia Provia News in Blodecan.
In Kenya, an IT platform is helping low-income earners get the kind of affordable health insurance that was once only available to the middle class and the affluent. It is giving residents in the Nairobi slum of Kibera access to much-needed health care through their mobile devices. As Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi, 10,000 Kibera residents are so far using this technology.
It's early in the morning in Kibera, and Winnie Manga is preparing to go to work. The mother of six has a tailoring business where she makes about $30 a month, barely enough to meet her basic needs. But a mobile device known as M-Tiba allows Manga to save a dollar a month for healthcare. She downloads an app on her phone that sets up a savings account she uses to pay her health costs. She says this has enabled her family to get medical treatment that was once viewed as a luxury.
It helps a lot in the local health facilities around here, but in big hospitals, the charges are exorbitant and one can't afford it. When my grandson was sick, I would have been charged quite a lot, but since I had been saving for a while, I got the medicines at a reduced price, and they were quality drugs, too.
The so-called M-Tiba Mobile Health Wallet allows registered users to save money for healthcare services at various registered clinics for an affordable cost. Dr. Stanley Simiu has been treating patients at his clinic for 4 years. He says since the adoption of the platform, more Kibera residents are coming to the clinic, though he acknowledges there are some limitations.
Sometimes patients could come and they don't have enough money in the wallet, and that calls for a top-up for them. And also some of the patients could walk in and they're not able actually to use the cell phone well. So you have to get in and start training them again on how to.
M-Tiba partnered with CarePay and PharmAccess to develop the health wallet. And so far, 10,000 people are using the technology. Kees van Led of M-Tiba says access to healthcare is a right for all.
We want to make healthcare truly inclusive for all Kenyans. Right now in Kenya, only 2% of the population has comprehensive health insurance. More than 1 million Kenyans end up in poverty every year because of health-related expenses, and we want to stop that.
Some 2,000 health facilities nationwide have signed on to M-Tiba's health wallet program. Lenny Rovaga for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
The World Health Organization says the health and well-being of an estimated 60 million people worldwide are likely to be affected by the El Niño weather phenomena this year. The WHO says people in the tropics will be most seriously affected by extreme changes in temperatures and rainfall patterns. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
El Niño, which emerged toward the end of last year, is expected to peak this month and then begin to wind down through March and April. But the World Health Organization warns the health consequences will likely worsen as the full effects of El Niño are felt throughout 2016. El Niño is defined by unusually warm ocean temperatures in the central and eastern equatorial Pacific. It produces extreme drought and acute water shortages, as well as heavy rainfall and flooding in different parts of the world. People in the Horn of Africa, southern and eastern Africa, South Pacific, Central America, and South Asia will likely suffer most from these extreme weather conditions. The WHO says seven countries, Tanzania, Kenya, Chad, Somalia, Nicaragua, Honduras, and Peru, are most at risk. The WHO's Director of Emergency Risk Management and Humanitarian Response, Rick Brennan, says the health impacts from El Niño are significant.
So we have a broad range of potential impacts, from malnutrition to infectious diseases to disruptions of health services. And again, it's the most vulnerable. It's the poorest countries, it's the elderly, it's the children that are most impacted.
Brennan says drought associated with El Niño can result in high levels of malnutrition and lead to death among children. He says acute water shortages can disrupt sanitation and hygiene services, causing infections such as diarrheal disease and scabies. On the other hand, he says heavy rains can increase the risk of diseases such as malaria and dengue. He says flooding can kill and injure people, as well as damage and disrupt vital infrastructure. Brennan says countries can take a number of steps to prepare for El Niño and limit its health consequences. These include disease control measures, such as vaccinating malnourished children against measles. He says countries should increase hygiene services to control infectious diseases and prevent the spread of malaria, dengue, and other diseases. He says surveillance systems to detect disease outbreaks early should be scaled up so quick action can be taken to contain them. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin with football. Morocco stand hosts Rwanda 4-1 in the capital, Kigali, as Ivory Coast dismissed Gabon 4-1 in Butare, some 140 kilometers south of Kigali, as Group A action concluded at the Orange African Nations Championship in Rwanda on Sunday. Rwanda and Ivory Coast advanced to the quarterfinals. Earlier on Saturday, Zambia pipped Uganda 1-0 as Mali edged Zimbabwe by a solitary goal in Group D action at the Umganda Stadium in Gishenyi. Zambia has 6 points and qualify for the quarterfinals with a game in hand. Mali has 3 points, Uganda 1, while Zimbabwe have no point. On Friday, Niger and Guinea drew 2-2 as Tunisia and Nigeria played to a 1-1 draw in Group C action at the Nyamiramba Stadium in Kigali. Nigeria topped the group with 4 points. Guinea and Tunisia are tied on 2 points each, while Niger has 1 point. Today, Monday, Group B action concludes with Ethiopia playing Angola at the Amahoro National Stadium in Kigali, and Cameroon face the Democratic Republic of Congo at the Huye Stadium in Butare. The Congolese lead the group with 6 points. Cameroon has 4, Ethiopia 1, while Angola has no point. Turning to handball, defending champions Algeria outplayed Morocco 27-22, hosts Egypt beat Cameroon 30-20, as Nigeria pipped Gabon 31-30 in Group A action at the Africa Men's Handball Championships in Cairo on Saturday. In Group B, Tunisia outclassed Kenya 53-15, Angola edged the Republic of Congo 28-26, and the Democratic Republic of Congo pipped Libya 20-19. Earlier on Friday, Algeria dismissed Gabon 35-24, Morocco edged Cameroon 26-24, and Egypt outplayed Nigeria 34-20. The Republic of Congo dismissed Kenya 34-19, Angola beat Libya 29-15, and Tunisia outplayed the Democratic Republic of Congo 37-22. Today, Monday, Cameroon challenge Algeria, Morocco face Nigeria, and Egypt tackle Gabon. Angola engage the Democratic Republic of Congo. Kenya play Libya, while the Republic of Congo challenge Tunisia. Finally, in athletics, Ethiopians Tesfaye Dibaba Abera ran a lifetime best of 2 hours, 4 minutes, and 24 seconds, as Tirfi Beyene Tsegei clocked 2 hours, 19 minutes, and 41 seconds to win the men's and women's races, respectively, at the Standard Chartered Dubai Marathon in the United Arab Emirates on Friday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. After almost 2 months of clashes between Oromo protesters and security forces in Ethiopia, authorities have scrapped a master plan that would have expanded the boundaries of Addis Ababa and, according to protesters, would have displaced Oromo farmers. However, observers are divided on the significance of the move by Ethiopia and whether it truly represents a change of policy or just a reaction to negative publicity. That is it for this Monday, January 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barty in Washington, hoping that you will have a productive week.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou and her guest Carolyn Miles, President and CEO of Save the Children US, discussing Ethiopia's drought and children's hunger and other challenges. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by the phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.